Rogues Gallery Uncovered. Bad behaviour in period costume. A non-judgmental ferret into the scandalous lives of history's greatest libertines, Lotharios, and complete bastards. This podcast contains adult themes and a touch of colourful language. So watch it. Teenage Rampage, Confessions of an 18th Century Raver, with William Hickey. I'll be honest, when I relaunched the podcast after, what was it, nearly a year of not doing anything, I was a bit worried that my roguish audience would have disappeared, gone to regularly uploading Pastures New, and that would have been perfectly understandable. Imagine then my disreputable delight when, according to my all-important stats, even more people downloaded the episode than they'd been doing before. I'm really appreciative and not a little chuffed, so before we enjoy a couple of nights out with a Georgian teenage tearaway, I'll take this opportunity to bellow a roguish shout-out to a couple of particular reprobates who messaged me with words of welcome. Well, welcome back. Nectar Vam and Maya Kincaid Vaults on Facebook, R.A. Poe and Nick Davis on X, Michael on YouTube, and Dara Hammond on Classic Email. Thanks to all of you for taking the time to get in touch and say some really lovely things. By way of contrast, I noticed a less enthusiastic recent comment on my episode about Samuel Pepys from a gentleman who, after listening to the first minute, called it, and I quote, utter tripe, and then wished that I'd had a seat on the Titanic, which just goes to show that you can't please everyone, and nor should you try. All comments, good or bad, are more than welcome on socials by emailing simon@roguesgalleryonline.com or by visiting roguesgalleryuncovered.com. Those addresses are, of course, in the show notes. Right, I don't know about you, but I fancy a gin and some low company. So let's get cracking. The following tale is written in the present tense of the period in which it's set, and as such may contain attitudes and opinions of the protagonists and their times, which would today be considered unacceptable. As I am sadly neither a teenager nor living in the 18th century, those attitudes and opinions probably won't be mine. London, 1767. William Hickey is 18. He's just left boarding school in the village of Streatham, and is now living in London and training to be a lawyer. It's been an exciting and productive year. It's just a pity, though, that all that legal bollocks keeps getting in the way. Hickey has spent a lot of time since gaining employment becoming proficient at billiards. He frequents tables at Windmill Street, Whitehall, the Admiralty, the Angel, the back of St. Clemens, and Chancery Lane. Despite being left-handed, he's also learned to use a sword. Although, between you and me, if he ever fights a duel, he'll almost certainly lose within seconds. His father despairs of his behaviour, which he considers both idle and dissipated. Sometimes Hickey stays out on the town all night, goes straight to the office at dawn, and then sleeps at his desk. His superior, Mr. Bailey, wakes him up when it's time to start work, and as he lifts his drooling head from the ink-stained wood, Hickey often feels the full force of his disapproval. "Indeed, William, these are sad doings," he admonishes him. "God only knows to what a life such excess will lead you." Hickey, however, doesn't care. He's a roaring boy, and he enjoys a good night out. Along with a group of like-minded young men, he usually begins a typical evening with dinner at Slaughter's in St. Martin's Lane. They tend to meet up in a private room as they find the company of the establishment's more mature diners just too boring. Hickey refers to them as stupid formal ancient prigs, the horrid periwig bores, everway unfit to herd with such bloods as us. Then, they usually move on to a couple of brothels on Bow Street, Covent Garden. One of these is run by a board named Mrs. Coxage, honestly, and is situated next to the offices of the famous blind magistrate Sir John Fielding. Hickey says that Fielding must be deaf as well as blind not to know what's going on next door, which always gets a laugh. As he sits in the salon, waiting for a girl to become available, Hickey usually only sips from the bowls of powerful arak punch that's offered to him. As fun as it is being drunk, he wisely never wants to be incapable of enjoying his partner for the evening. Hickey, though, hasn't been seen out on the town for a while. He's been in bed with a fever for 3 weeks, following a boozy night out during which he got so pissed that he stole a boat, rowed across the Thames, fell into every pothole and rubbish tip in Westminster, and then passed out in the street in front of his father's wealthy friends. Upon his recovery, he spent 2 very tedious months as the very picture of sobriety and restraint. He now considers himself morally strong enough, though, to return to Slaughter's and reacquaint himself with his old friends, without falling back into his dissolute ways. By 11 o'clock, though, he's totally hammered, and the gang are off to Bow Street. Someone suggests a new place of entertainment called Weatherby's, which is down the narrow end of Little Russell Street in Drury Lane. The door looks like the entrance to a prison, stout wood reinforced by iron bars. Somebody rings the bell, and a little spy hole slides open. A pair of piggy eyes stares out malevolently, and a coarse voice snarls, "Who's there?" Some bold fellow announces, "Friends!" And several bolts are drawn back before the door is opened. One by one, the tipsy young gentlemen file in, Hickey at the rear. As he enters, the door slams shut behind him, and the doorman, who looks like an ox in a neckcloth, is bolting it again securely. Even Hickey's ardour is dampened by what he sees in front of him. The room is in an absolute uproar, with men and women standing on chairs, tables and benches. They're all shouting encouragement to 2 wild-haired, scraggy-looking harlots who are rolling around on the beer-stained floor, intent on tearing each other's throats out. They're both covered in bleeding scratches and are shrieking obscenities at each other that would offend the ears of a bosun's mate. Hickey notices that both are bare-breasted, but the contents of his breeches remain totally unmoved. He'll later make the acquaintance of one of these ladies, a Miss Burgess, who turns out to be very nice, although you wouldn't want to annoy her after a few gins. Such is the revulsion on his face as he stumbles back towards the door, several people tell him not to worry, because in Weatherby's, it's always like this. He finally manages to tear his eyes away from the scrap, only to find himself looking at a man at the opposite end of the room who is himself getting attacked by 3 women at the same time. Without a hint of gallantry, the man is punching each woman to the floor. But as soon as they go down, they leap back up again and pummel him with blows and vicious kicks. Some of the laughing men watching are also hitting him with their heavy sticks when he isn't looking, and the weakened bully eventually disappears under a flurry of blows from all sides. Hickey decides he's had enough and runs to the exit. He's struggling frantically with the latch when he's grabbed by the collar and thrust up against a wall. The doorman thinks he's trying to do a runner without paying and is far from happy. "I think you came in not long since and with a party. What? Do you want to tip us a bilk? Have you paid your reckoning, eh? No, no, youngster, no tricks upon travellers. No exit here until you've passed muster, my chick." With a groan of despair, Hickey returns to the carnage of the taproom, the doorman, who's proud of his deductive abilities, following close behind. "So the young'un there wanted to be off, but I said as how I knew a trick worth 2 of that. Too much experience to be taken in by such a sucker. Told him not to expect to catch old birds with chaff, didn't I, young'un, eh?" A picture of misery, Hickey remains at Weatherby's until his friends wish to leave. Frustratingly, the more miserable he becomes, the more they laugh at him. His relief when they finally do walk out is short-lived as, laughing even harder, they take him to a place called Murphy's, which is just as bad. He vows never to return to Weatherby's again. A month later, of course, he's back. Now, Hickey may be fond of a drink or two, but his favourite pastime is sex. He simply loves the ladies. His final term at school had been marred by scandal and near expulsion. When it was revealed that a maid by the name of Nancy Dye had been sneaking into his dorm room after lights out. The expulsion came because of a fat boy called Blackall, who had seen Nancy tiptoeing into Hickey's chambers and asked her to visit him in the night as well. Well, Nancy, in no uncertain terms, told the horny little porker what he could do with his idea, so he threatened to expose the pair to the headmaster. Hickey, quite rightly, gave the blackmailing little sneak a proper beating for his impertinence, which led to the arrangement becoming common knowledge. So much then for school days. Today, Hickey is a man of the world. As a trainee lawyer, he fully enjoys London's banyos, bawdy houses, nunneries and brothels. The city is literally bursting with opportunities for a young gentleman such as he to jock himself stupid. The pox, of course, is an occupational hazard. But shuffling about covered in mercury plasters with a large hole where your nose used to be is something that happens to other people, not Hickey. The pox, however, is the last thing on Hickey's mind at the moment because he's currently pursuing a lady of quality named Fanny Temple. Fanny is well-spoken, never swears, speaks French assez bien, has a lovely singing voice, and probably goes like a cooper's hammering arm. At the moment, she's the mistress of a well-heeled mystery gentleman who pays for her countryside lodgings in Hammersmith, her carriage, and her servants. He also pays for her rooms on Queen Anne Street, which is where she and Hickey find themselves one night in May. As they both tumble into bed, Hickey is just pondering on how much better this is than a night at Weatherby's when there's a commotion in the corridor outside. It's the cook, shouting, "Thieves! Thieves!" at the top of her voice. The look of shock on Fanny's face, combined with her cry of, "My God, I'm undone!" convinces Hickey that it's probably not thieves at all, but rather a subtle code indicating that the mystery gentleman has arrived unexpectedly. Panic overriding distaste at becoming a romantic fiction cliché, Hickey hides in a nearby closet. From within, he hears the lustful voice of Fanny's protector and recognises it as that of a 60-year-old friend of his family. This upstanding pillar of the community has 8 children and a solid, happy marriage based on strong Christian values. So it's of particular annoyance that the dirty old buggers pop round to his strumpet's house for a quick one without warning. Fanny thinks fast and calls the maid to air some clean sheets while leading the old goat into the dining room. Hickey can hear her telling him that she has a headache, but is overcome with happiness at his surprise visit. Squatting in the closet, nursing a powerful erection, Hickey, though, is himself very far from happy. The maid takes the sheets and Hickey's clothes down to the parlour, locking the bedroom door behind her. Hickey climbs out the window, sneaks into the parlour, gets dressed, and makes his frustrated escape. He definitely won't be going back there again. The next day, Hickey receives a note from Fanny at his rooms asking if they can meet later. And before you can say boxing the Jesuit, he's back at Queen Anne Street, where he happily remains for several hours. Oh, it's good to be young. Both of those exploits were taken from William Hickey's own memoirs, written when he was an old man living a lonely life back in England after a lifetime of travel in India, China, and the Caribbean. The memoirs were discovered in the early 1900s, nearly a century after he died. He apparently didn't think anybody would be interested in his reminiscences and so wrote them for himself as a kind of private trip down memory lane. How wrong he was. Hickey died aged 80 and was by then considered a very reformed rake. But the recollections of his wild youth brings the world of Georgian London's bawdy houses and drinking dens vividly to life. I've got a copy and it seems a shame to waste it, so here's an extract set in the same late 1760s period in which he remembers two more teenage haunts, although, by the sound of it, I'm surprised he could remember anything at all. Good lad. Alas, I never possessed a single grain of self-command, or control over my passions. One short week ended all my good resolves, and I sunk deeper than ever in error. Not a night but I passed a considerable portion of in every degree of dissipation and debauchery, mixing with the most abandoned of both sexes. In addition to Weatherby's and Marjoram's, I had now discovered two other receptacles of the same stamp, or, if the degrees of depravity and infamy would admit, even worse. The one was facetiously called the Soup Shop, a dirty, vile alehouse in Bridges Street, Drury Lane, where it was the custom to take a basin of ox-cheek broth at 6 o'clock in the morning, a villainous compound of filth I took special care not a drop of should ever pass my lips. The other new discovery was significantly named The Finish. This was a shed in Covent Garden Market, then tofore dignified by the title of Carpenter's Coffee House, and where they still continued to dole out a Spartan mixture difficult to ascertain the ingredients of, but which was served as coffee. Returning home from these intemperate scenes, if my father was out of town, as he generally was, I went to bed for 4 or 5 hours. But if in town, I went directly to my desk, where, laying my head down upon it, I soon fell asleep. We've got a couple of pubs like that where I live. As for women, teenage Hickey certainly enjoyed putting it about. Sometimes he got his end away using seduction, but more often than not, it was simply by paying for it. In this final extract, he reminds us that the life of an 18th century prostitute was often tragically short, and reveals how, to his bemusement, he often found coupling with common streetwalkers more exciting than seducing some high-born woman of quality. But that's Generation G for you. Weird. In the month of June 1768, my early favourite, Nanny Harris, whom I've already so often mentioned, died. A martyr to a life of excess and to venereal taints. The death of this young creature caused me real and unfeigned sorrow. I was at this period no more than 19 old. A strong instance I was of how prone youths of that age are to be fickle. For although I had the entree, whenever I pleased, not only to Fanny Temples, but to others of the finest women then upon the town, amongst whom were Madame Latour, kept in the most extravagant manner by Sir Peniston Lamb, now Lord Melbourne, Mrs. Sturgis, Miss Larkin, etc., etc., and with any or either of these I never need have expended a shilling. Yet, probably from that very reason and a natural perverseness of disposition, I frequently preferred going to a bagnio with the most hackneyed and common woman, which not only ran away with my money, but injured my health. Of the latter, however, I never thought, nor much indeed of the former. There was an extravagant and common little harlot named Brent, to whom I was strongly attached. She was not at all pretty, being much pitted with the smallpox, mercenary in the highest degree, and addicted to drinking. Yet, notwithstanding all these failings, there was something about her which fascinated me, and often did I prefer taking her to Malby's under the piazza of Covent Garden, and there passing the night at a considerable expense, to partaking, as I might have done gratis, every species of elegance and luxury at the accomplished Fanny Temples, or others I've alluded to. Hickey's teenage rollicking came to an end when his exasperated father packed him off to India, and there's at least another episode to be made of his experiences in bed and out of it there. For the time being, however, we'll leave him, with a shattering hangover, persistent itching, and his 20s knocking on the door. I'm feeling quite wistful. Next time on Rogues Gallery Uncovered. Sodomy seems to be the hardest word. Nobody expects 15th century Spain's biggest party pooper, with Tomás de Torquemada and the Spanish Inquisition. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, tell your friends, or tell complete strangers by loudly shouting about it on social media. Let me know if there's anyone you'd like to hear featured. I am putting all of your suggestions on the list, and whether you'd be interested in hearing more of William Hickey's story sometime soon. Simon at Rogues Gallery Online is your portal to my attention, or visit roguesgalleryuncovered.com, where you can sign up for my newsletter and become a lovable rogue. I'm planning on sending out a new one next week. Both these addresses are, as you might expect, in the show notes. Right, well, that's it for now. Stay roguish, have a great fortnight, and I'll see you yesterday.